Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we cut through the noise to give you the clearest, most compelling insights from the cutting edge of science and wellness. Today, we're asking a question that, honestly, might just redefine what you think is possible for your own body.
Okay.
What if we could genuinely redefine our biological age, unlock profound healing capabilities, and enhance our natural human potential far beyond what, you know, traditional medicine typically addresses?
It absolutely sounds like something straight out of a futuristic novel, doesn't it?
It really does.
But that's precisely the fascinating realm we're stepping into today. We're diving deep into the world of peptides and an even newer emerging frontier called bioregulators.
Bioregulators, okay.
And these are fundamentally different from your typical pharmaceuticals. Instead, they interact with your body's own intricate signaling systems, offering a highly personalized, incredibly precise approach to health optimization and, well, true longevity.
That's right. And our mission for this deep dive is to unpack some truly revolutionary insights that could empower you, the listener, to think differently about your health.
Yeah, get some real tools.
Exactly. We've pulled from an extensive online resource, InfinityPeptide.com, alongside a really compelling conversation from the Mind Pump YouTube show.
Oh, yeah, Mind Pump. Good stuff.
Yeah, featuring a true OG biohacker and leading expert, Jay Campbell. He brings literally decades of hands-on experience and a unique, sometimes kind of contrarian perspective to this rapidly evolving field.
He really does. Decades. Our goal today is to meticulously break down what peptides are, how they fundamentally differ from conventional drugs, their surprising and often overlooked history, particularly in Russia, alongside critical safety considerations, and their incredibly diverse applications.
Right.
We're talking about everything from highly targeted fat loss and muscle building to boosting immunity, accelerating healing, enhancing cognitive function, even regenerating hair.
Yeah.
And then we'll peek into the mind-blowing potential of bioregulators, a development Jay Campbell describes as making even peptides look like child's play.
Child's play. Okay, that's a bold claim. Let's unpack this. Our first stop is understanding exactly what peptides are, and maybe more importantly, how they fundamentally differ from the traditional drugs many of us are familiar with.
Yeah.
Because this isn't just a nuance, right? It's a crucial paradigm-shifting distinction.
That's the absolute core of the discussion.
Yeah.
The fundamental difference lies in their origin and how they interact with your body. Traditional pharmaceuticals are often, you know, synthetic chemical compounds.
Made in a lab.
Exactly. Created in a lab, designed to force a specific reaction or maybe block a particular pathway. Think of it like a highly specialized wrench forcing a bolt to turn, or maybe a key designed to jam a lock. It's kind of an external force.
So if they're synthetic, does that mean our body might treat them like something foreign or even like an intruder? Is that how it works?
Precisely, right. Yeah. And because of that, those synthetic drugs can often have poorly understood downstream effects or even downregulating impacts on your body's natural processes.
Right, side effects.
Exactly. You might be solving one problem, but inadvertently creating others, or maybe diminishing your body's natural ability to self-regulate and function in that area. It's a common trade-off, really, in conventional pharmacology.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting with peptides, though. And it's a point Jay Campbell emphasizes quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Peptides are actually derived from signaling chemicals and compounds that your body already produces.
Right, they're native.
They are, in essence, very short chains of amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, and they act like specific messengers within your biological system.
That's the key. Because these molecules are native to your biology, your body knows what to do with them, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like giving your body a blueprint it already understands, or providing the missing piece to a puzzle it was designed to solve, rather than trying to impose some foreign instruction manual.
That makes sense.
This inherent familiarity means they integrate seamlessly, working with your body's natural intelligence rather than forcing a reaction against its will, so to speak.
And this leads to another crucial distinction, right? Peptides are designed to address the root cause of an issue, promoting a regenerative effect within the body.
Exactly. Regeneration, not just suppression.
In stark contrast, traditional pharmaceuticals, more often than not, are focused on treating symptoms. You have a headache, you take a painkiller. Mm-hmm. The pain goes away, maybe, but the underlying cause of the headache, be it dehydration, stress, whatever, isn't necessarily addressed.
Exactly. Peptides, on the other hand, aim to regenerate tissues, stimulate natural processes, or correct imbalances at a foundational cellular level.
Cellular level, okay.
They're not just putting a band-aid on the symptom. They're working to fix the underlying problem by restoring physiological function. This fundamental difference truly places peptides in a distinct and, frankly, revolutionary category of medicine.
It sounds like it.
It's why their popularity and apparent effectiveness are growing so rapidly as people seek more fundamental solutions. And this distinction also has profound implications for their commercial viability within the traditional pharmaceutical model, which is a whole other can of worms.
That's a fascinating point you just touched on. This immediate difference, the fact that they work with the body, flags a massive hurdle for peptides in the traditional Western medical system.
Huge hurdle.
It's not just a commercial preference. It's a fundamental divergence. This insight highlights how the very structure of pharmaceutical industries, which rely heavily on exclusive patents, can inadvertently sideline natural, effective solutions simply because they don't fit that specific profit model.
Precisely. Hard to patent something your body already makes or a slight variation of it.
So how did someone like Jay Campbell even get into this space, especially given how niche it seems to have been for so long?
Well, Jay Campbell's journey is quite fascinating and really speaks to his OG status, as you called it. His initial claim to fame actually stems from writing what became the number one selling books on Amazon for hormone optimization.
Oh, right, the hormone stuff.
Specifically around testosterone therapy. We're talking titles like The Definitive TRT Manual and The TOT Bible. So he was already deeply immersed in the world of biological optimization, really pushing the boundaries of what was commonly accepted back then.
He truly was an OG biohacker, even before that term was, like, everywhere. Tracing his experience back to 2004.
Yeah, 2004.
That's well over a decade and a half of being in this space,
yeah.
Often operating far behind the scenes, experimenting and learning.
And his entry into peptides, as he describes it, began through what he vividly calls underground bro bodybuilding boards.
Ah, okay. The bro science underground.
Exactly, like anabolic fitness. This was a time when cutting-edge information, or at least what people thought was cutting-edge, was shared within a very niche, almost anonymous community, peer-to-peer discussions far from academic journals or mainstream media.
Right.
It really speaks to the grassroots, almost rebellious nature of discovery in this field before it hit any kind of mainstream recognition.
And his very first experience was truly profound, almost transformative for him. He used epimorlin, which is a growth hormone-releasing peptide.
We'll talk more about that one later.
Right. And the effects on his fat loss, his body composition, even the depth of his sleep were so significant that it immediately sparked his intense interest.
Yeah, he uses the word profound.
He refers to it as a profound change, one that instantly convinced him of the power of these compounds and set him squarely on this new research path.
And what really solidified his commitment and propelled him into such deep advocacy was his own personal health catalyst.
Oh, what happened?
At the remarkably young age of 29, after a basketball injury, he developed hypogonadism.
Wow, 29.
Yeah, leaving him with the testosterone levels of like a geriatric man. This initiated a 22-year journey on therapeutic testosterone, cementing his dedication to meticulously researching and advocating for biohacking methods that fundamentally improve human physiology. He's been on TRT for over two decades, personally testing various approaches.
That's commitment. He genuinely became a student of the game, as he puts it, devouring everything he could find.
Everything.
This included obscure Bulgarian and Russian research papers, countless discussions on those underground forums, and meticulously tabulating and experimenting with various therapeutic methods.
Yeah, he's methodical.
We're talking about every testosterone delivery system you can imagine. Transdermal gels and creams, different injectable forms, subcutaneous injections, even transcriptal creams. His approach was truly systematic self-experimentation informed by deep research.
It's that level of detailed personal experimentation and deep dives into the scientific literature that truly sets someone like Jay Campbell apart. His recently published book, Optimize Your Health with Therapeutic Peptides, is really a testament to his continued dedication and evolving understanding of the field, making complex information accessible.
So we've touched on Jay's personal journey, which hints at the underground nature of peptides early on, at least in the West.
Definitely underground.
But there's a much deeper history here, particularly involving Russia. And this is where things get really interesting, because the narrative diverges quite a bit from what we might expect about medical research.
Oh, yeah. What's truly fascinating here is the starkly different approaches to medicine that emerged globally. Russia, for example, has actually been utilizing peptides since the 1940s.
The 1940s?
Seriously, since the 40s. Think about that, a remarkably long history that predates their current mainstream recognition in the West by many, many decades. They were pioneers in this specific realm.
And it's not that the United States was ignorant of them. Apparently, the U.S. also knew about peptides in the 1930s.
Right.
However, as Jay Campbell explains it, there was a reported strategic shift allegedly driven by what he calls the prevailing corporatocracy and the significant influence of institutions like the Rockefeller Foundation.
The Rockefellers.
This reportedly steered the dominant medical paradigm in the West away from natural biological solutions and towards petroleum-based products and synthetic pharmacology. That's the claim anyway.
And this brings us to a crucial, almost philosophical point, the patent problem.
Right, you mentioned that.
Peptides, being organic and based on biological systems that your body naturally produces, are inherently difficult to patent.
Yes.
If you can't patent something, if you can't establish exclusive intellectual property rights, it's far less commercially attractive for pharmaceutical companies.
Because their whole model is built on that exclusivity.
Exactly. Their entire business model relies on IP and exclusivity to recoup massive R&D investments and, you know, generate profit.
So this patent problem created a profound fork in the road. While the West leaned towards commercially viable synthetic compounds.
The Russian philosophy, particularly during the Soviet era, had a very different ethos. Jay explains they were driven by a public health mandate, a focus on developing solutions that truly treated illness and improved the general population's health, regardless of immediate profit.
A different motivation.
A completely different motivation. This philosophical divergence profoundly shaped the trajectory of peptide research and use in each country, leading Russia down a path of deep exploration into these natural biological regulators for decades, a body of work largely unknown in the West until, well, fairly recently.
And that divergent path led the Russians to the revolutionary world of bioregulators.
Bioregulators, yeah. These are described as an even more advanced form of peptides, essentially fractionated proteins characterized by what's called tissue-specific sensitivity.
Tissue-specific sensitivity. What does that mean exactly?
It means they're designed to recognize and interact only with very specific cells or tissues in the body. Super targeted.
Okay. And what's truly groundbreaking about them, Jay Campbell describes it as insane, is their oral bioavailability.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
This means they can be taken as a pill or capsule and somehow manage to bypass the first pass metabolism in the liver and digestive system, which typically destroys most orally taken protein-based compounds before they can have any effect.
Right. Usually peptides need to be injected because the stomach acid just demolishes them, but these somehow survive.
So they can be simply swallowed and still reach their intended target.
Apparently so, which is incredibly convenient, obviously. And their action is remarkably precise and targeted. Bioregulators are designed to specifically strengthen individual organs and tissues we're talking about. Very targeted support for the heart, kidneys, intestines, testes, prostate, even the brain.
Like sending in a repair crew just for the heart or just for the kidneys?
Exactly like that. Highly specialized repair crews for each specific organ system.
And this isn't just theory either, right? There's research behind it.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Cavinson, a leading Russian researcher, has published extensively on bioregulators with over 40 years of meticulous research backing their efficacy and safety.
40 years? Wow.
Think about that. Four decades of dedicated government-funded study into these compounds.
Give us an example. How would one work?
Okay, a compelling example Jay Campbell provides is for men over 40. A prostate bioregulator, when taken consistently, can strengthen the prostate, potentially preventing or reversing issues like benign prostatic hyperplasia or BPH.
Right, which affects so many older men.
A staggering 95% of aging men, according to him. This concept of proactively strengthening and regenerating an organ system preventatively can be extrapolated to virtually every part of the body.
So it shifts the focus from treating disease to actually optimizing the organ before it gets disease.
Exactly. Proactive physiological maintenance.
What's truly remarkable, and perhaps a clear sign of things to come, is that these bioregulators have quite suddenly become available in the United States.
Yeah, that's new.
Even on platforms like Amazon. Apparently within just the last 3 to 6 months. That's a massive, almost overnight shift in accessibility for something with such a long, impactful history elsewhere.
It's definitely a big shift. Does this signal a broader change in regulatory thinking? Or are we just seeing a new kind of Wild West in supplement sales for these compounds? Probably a bit of both.
Oh boy.
But the profound implications are significant regardless. Jay Campbell goes so far as to suggest that bioregulators are so powerful that they make peptides look like child's play.
Child's play again?
Okay. He even posits that they could ultimately eliminate the need for many conventional diagnostic tools and doctor visits for organ health, fundamentally changing our approach to preventative and restorative care, moving us towards that system of proactive physiological maintenance we talked about.
Okay, the potential is clearly mind-blowing. But let's bring it back down to earth for a moment and talk about the practical side of peptides, specifically safety, dosage, administration.
Crucial stuff, yeah.
As with any powerful tool that interacts with our biology, understanding how to use it safely and effectively is absolutely paramount.
Absolutely. Echoing the wisdom of Tim Ferriss, Jay Campbell reminds us that the difference between a pill and a poison is the dosage.
Right. Dose makes the poison.
Exactly. While peptides are generally well tolerated because they mimic natural body compounds, taking too much always carries a risk. It's about respecting the compound and your body's capacity to process it.
And thankfully, the worst observed side effects from peptides seem relatively minor and transient.
That's what the reports suggest, yeah.
Mm.
We're talking about things like localized redness or flushing, maybe some itching, or minor cellulitis at the injection site almost exclusively from accidental overdosing or maybe improper injection technique. Nothing that sounds systemic or life-threatening, generally.
Okay.
A surprisingly common issue, as Jay points out, is simply confusion between micrograms and milligrams. Mix Stei versus MG.
The units. Easy mistake to make if you're not careful.
Very easy. These are tiny units of measurement, and if you accidentally mix them up, you could inadvertently take a dose 1,000 times larger than intended.
1,000 times.
Yikes.
Yeah. This highlights the absolute importance of precise measurement, understanding the reconstitution instructions if it's a powder, and using accurate insulin syringes for subcutaneous injection. Pay attention to the details.
Are there other sensitivities?
Yeah, there are specific individual sensitivities. Some peptides, like melanotan II, which people sometimes use for tanning.
Right, the tanning peptide.
That one can cause nausea or flushing with excessive dosage, or sometimes just due to individual genetic predispositions, known as polymorphisms. But even with these, the overall safety profile remains remarkably strong compared to many pharmaceutical drugs.
And crucially, despite the growing global use of peptides, you're saying there have been no reported deaths from peptide injections.
According to Jay Campbell, no reported deaths directly attributed to peptide injections. That's a truly significant data point that underscores their inherent safety when used correctly. Okay, this leads us to the prevalence of research chemical companies, or RCCs.
Mm-hmm.
The RCCs.
Yeah,
they're now everywhere, widely accessible online. A stark contrast to the truly underground days Jay described.
Absolutely.
This widespread availability has dramatically increased access, but it also introduces new considerations, doesn't it?
It does. With ubiquity, unfortunately, comes concerns about quality control. While many reputable RCCs do use rigorous quality control processes similar to compounding pharmacies, some may lack proper regulation. Meaning products potentially being made in non-sterile environments or containing impurities or maybe not having the correct concentration. This is where informed consumerism becomes absolutely critical for anyone considering these compounds. You have to do your homework.
So what should people look for?
It's paramount for consumers to choose RCCs with an established reputation, excellent reviews, and ideally transparent sourcing for their raw materials. Jay Campbell stresses that these raw materials should ideally come from the very same reputable suppliers that compounding pharmacies use. It's about doing your diligent homework to ensure you're getting a pure, high-quality product. Look for third-party testing results if they offer them.
And it's important to understand the legal landscape here too, right? The disclaimer.
Exactly. RCCs typically include explicit disclaimers stating their products are not for human consumption and are for laboratory animal use only.
Which legally covers them.
Right. It legally indemnifies them from liability. However, it's widely known, it's kind of an open secret, that individuals are using these products themselves, essentially becoming their own laboratory animals in a quest for health optimization. It's a legal gray area that consumers navigate at their own discretion and risk.
Okay, Beyond safety, it's essential to understand the concept of peptide cycling and its impact on efficacy.
Yes, cycling is key.
And also the important consideration of IGF-1 levels for certain peptides. Why is cycling necessary?
Well, over time, your body can actually build antibodies to peptides.
Antibodies, like it recognizes them as foreign eventually.
Sort of, yeah. Or it just adapts to their presence. This means they can lose their effectiveness, or the results might plateau. Your immune system or other systems start to recognize them and potentially neutralize them or downregulate the response.
So what's the guideline?
A general guideline that Jay Campbell recommends is to not use most peptides for longer than 8 weeks continuously.
8 weeks on.
Followed by an equal period of time off, typically another 8 weeks. This cycling helps prevent that antibody formation, maintains your body's sensitivity, and ensures the peptide's efficacy when you resume.
So 8 weeks on, 8 weeks off. Got it.
It's about respecting your body's adaptive mechanisms and preventing desensitization.
And what about IGF-1? You mentioned that.
Right. This also brings up the importance of understanding your current IGF-1 levels, especially for growth hormone-releasing peptides, the ones that stimulate your body's natural IGF-1 production.
IGF-1. Insulin-like growth factor 1.
Exactly. It's a hormone that mediates many of the effects of growth hormone. If you're older, say 55 or above, and you naturally have low IGF-1 levels to begin with.
Which happens with age.
Right. Then these peptides that stimulate production might not work as intended because they're simply less endogenous production, your body's own natural production to stimulate. The well isn't deep enough to draw much water from, so to speak.
Ah, I see. So you need to know your baseline.
That's why testing is so critical. IGF-1 levels can be easily and affordably tested through a simple blood panel. Get your baseline.
Right.
If your natural IGF-1 production is minimal, then using direct growth hormone, actual HGH, might actually be a more appropriate and effective choice than peptides that rely on stimulating your already low existing production.
Makes sense.
It all comes back to knowing your unique physiology and making informed choices tailored to your body. No cookie-cutter approaches here.
All right, now let's really dive deep into some specific peptides and their diverse applications. It's worth noting, as you said, the FDA has already approved between 8 and 14 peptides for various uses.
Yeah, they're not all experimental fringe stuff. Some are established medicine.
So one of the most utilitarian peptides, as Jay Campbell calls it, is TA1 or thymosin alpha-1.
Yes, TA1.
He even described it as a sham-wow peptide due to its incredibly wide range of uses.
Huh, the sham-wow peptide. I like that. Its primary and most profound function is as an immune powerhouse.
Immunity, okay.
TA1 profoundly enhances human immunity, acting like a rapid responder for your immune system. Jay notes it can provide a significant immune boost within just an hour of administration.
An hour? That's fast.
Very fast. This makes it incredibly useful for preventative measures, like taking it before air travel where you're exposed to a ton of pathogens, or maybe at the very first sign of feeling sick.
Proactive use.
Exactly. It's also widely prescribed by doctors who are knowledgeable in peptides for its general immune modulating properties. It helps balance the immune system.
Okay. Then there's tesamorelin, also known by its FDA-approved name, EGRIFTA.
Tesamorelin.
Yes. Its original approved use was for HIV-positive individuals experiencing lipodystrophy.
Right, that specific type of fat accumulation. Hard, visceral fat around the organs. Really tough stuff to lose, even with liposuction, apparently.
Wow.
Tesamorelin effectively emulsifies and eliminates this visceral fat. Jay described it as like a hot knife through butter.
A hot knife through butter.
Vivid. It literally helps melt away this deep, unhealthy fat. This incredibly potent mechanism made it highly popular in the bodybuilding community for reducing stubborn belly fat, which is often the last place to lean out.
Makes sense.
Jay Campbell himself reported losing his entire midsection fat in just 4 weeks using it. Imagine suddenly being able to fit into pants you haven't worn in years or seeing your abs for the first time. That's the kind of result people chase.
But there are catches, right? Accessibility and cost.
Big catches, yeah. It's technically not sold by research chemical companies because it is FDA approved, making it hard to find outside of a medical prescription.
And expensive if you get a script.
Exceptionally expensive. Jay mentioned it could be as much as $4,200 a month for a script.
Whoa. Okay.
So when comparing it to high quality growth hormone for general muscle gain, its cost effectiveness is a real consideration. It's largely reserved for its specific visceral fat loss property, unless you have very deep pockets.
Gotcha. Moving to apomorelin, you mentioned Jay had a profound experience with this one early on.
Yeah, epramorlin. This peptide is unique and highly favored because it's the only growth hormone-releasing peptide, or GHRP, that doesn't seem to disturb your body's own natural growth hormone production rhythm.
So it works with your natural pulses.
Seems to, yeah. And crucially, it also doesn't increase prolactin or cortisol,
which other GH peptides can do.
Yes. And those hormones, when elevated, can lead to undesirable side effects like glandular issues, maybe gynecomastia in men, or increased anxiety or stress, respectively. So epomorelin gives you the growth hormone benefits without those common drawbacks.
In Jay Campbell's experience back in 2004.
He called it profound, yielding significant positive body composition changes. He also shared that his wife experienced a dramatic body transformation in 6 months using its significant leaning and toning.
Impressive.
Given its gentle yet powerful action, he considers it his favorite peptide for increasing GH naturally without negative physiological disruption.
Okay, interesting. Next up is ibutamorin, or MK-677.
Ah, MK-677, known in the bodybuilding world. While it's effective at increasing GH, it comes with some significant caveats.
Like what?
It also notably increases prolactin and cortisol, which, as we just discussed, can be problematic. And it acts as a ghrelin mimic.
Ghrelin, the hunger hormone.
The hunger hormone. So this leads to intense appetite stimulation. People report just insatiable hunger on it.
Okay, so not great if you're trying to diet.
Not at all. This appetite stimulation, combined with the other hormonal effects, often leads to significant water retention and makes it incredibly difficult to diet or get lean. This effectively makes it more suited for mass building or bulking phases.
Where putting on weight is the goal.
Exactly. Where weight gain and muscle growth are the primary goals rather than fat loss. It's also important to remember that, like other peptides, its effectiveness diminishes over time due to antibody buildup or receptor downregulation, absolutely requiring cycling off to maintain its impact. You can't just stay on it forever.
Right. The cycling principle again. Now, what about combining peptides? Jay mentioned a Rolls-Royce stack.
Yes. If you're looking for the absolute top-tier stack for muscle building with peptides, the combination of epomorelin and tesamorelin is considered the Rolls-Royce Platinum Deluxe package for gaining strength and building muscle.
Epomorelin and tesamorelin together. Why that combo?
Physiologically, this combo massively increases intracellular water retention, more water inside your muscle cells.
Which is good for growth.
Yes, it leads to dramatically better muscle pumps during workouts, increased strength, and enhanced glycogen restoration for sustained energy. The downside, however, is that it can also cause significant systemic water retention, particularly around the midsection.
So you might feel bigger and stronger, but maybe a bit puffy.
Exactly. While you're building muscle, you might not look as lean or defined because of the water. It's a trade-off.
Okay. Moving on to the incredibly exciting frontier of longevity peptides.
Yeah, this stuff is fascinating. MOTSC, a mitochondrial-derived peptide.
From the mitochondria.
Yeah, it's actually produced by your mitochondria. It's a powerful mitochondrial stimulator. Mitochondria are essentially the powerhouses of your cells, right? They generate almost all the energy your body needs.
So MOTSC boosts the powerhouses.
Exactly. It optimizes these powerhouses to enhance energy production at a fundamental cellular level.
Who would benefit most from that?
Theoretically, it works best for individuals with less optimized mitochondrial function. I think people who are maybe obese, inflamed, insulin resistant, or generally feeling chronically low energy.
Okay.
For these individuals, it can provide a more dramatic and noticeable effect, almost like jump-starting a stalled engine. Jay Campbell mentioned seeing game-changing results for obese individuals needing significant weight loss.
But results vary.
Oh, yeah. While some users report incredible energy, mental clarity, and stamina, personal responses can vary significantly. It highlights our inherent biochemical uniqueness. What works wonders for one person might be subtle for another.
Can you combine it with other things?
Yes, it can be effectively combined with things like infrared light therapy. MOTSC offers a more direct cellular stimulation compared to the external, broader effects of red light hitting the skin. They could be synergistic.
Interesting. Now, for something that truly feels like age reversal, Epitalon and Thymolin.
Ah, the longevity duo. These are recommended for individuals aged 40 to 45 and up, suggesting maybe 2 cycles per year as a consistent part of an anti-aging protocol.
2 cycles a year. Okay. What does Epitalon do? It sounds exotic.
Epitalon is a truly profound peptide. It works on the telomerase expression pathway.
Telomerase.
Yeah.
That's related to telomeres, right? Yeah. The ends of chromosomes.
Exactly. Telomerase is the enzyme responsible for maintaining telomere length. Telomeres are the protective caps at the ends of your chromosomes, and they naturally shorten with each cell division, a key marker of biological aging.
So shorter telomeres, older biological age, basically.
That's the general idea. By enhancing the telomerase enzyme, apitalon helps prevent or slow down telomere shortening, effectively slowing cellular aging and potentially lowering your biological age.
Wow.
It's almost akin to finding a philosopher's stone in its ability to extend cellular lifespan. Though users typically don't feel anything immediate when taking it, the effects are subtle and very long term. It's not like caffeine.
Right. And thymolin, what's its role?
Thymolin enhances the function of the thymus gland. The thymus is a critical organ, especially when you're young, for the maturation of T cells.
Immune cell.
Crucial immune cells, yeah. They're vital for immune modulation and fighting off infections. As we age, our thymus naturally shrinks and becomes less effective at atrophies.
So thymolin helps keep the thymus strong.
That's the goal. A stronger, more robust thymus, thanks to thymolin, leads to enhanced immunity and better disease resistance as one ages. The two, apitalon and thymolin, are found to be most effective when used together due to their synergistic actions supporting both cellular longevity and robust immunity.
A powerful combo for aging well.
Potentially, yes.
Interestingly, Jay Campbell mentioned that during the COVID-19 pandemic, there were reportedly efforts to crack down on thymolin and related peptides.
Yeah, he suggested that was due to their perceived effectiveness in boosting immunity.
Which, if true, reinforces that idea we discussed earlier, that some regulatory bodies might view these effective natural compounds as a threat to the traditional pharmaceutical industry's model.
It certainly feeds that narrative, yeah. Especially compounds that address root causes and potentially replace long-term symptom management drugs.
Okay, so for overall immunity and protection, TA1, thymosin alpha-1, provides that broad boost.
Right, the ShamWow peptide again, full body immunity.
But are there others that offer more specific protection against pathogens?
Definitely. LLM7 is a fascinating example. This peptide is a powerful antimicrobial, antifungal, and antipathogenic agent.
How does it work?
It works by directly disrupting the cell membranes of bacteria, fungi, and even some viruses. It basically pokes holes in them.
So it can prevent or treat infections.
That's the idea. It could potentially prevent or treat infections without the need for traditional pharmaceutical drugs. Jay Campbell noted that if you had LL37 on hand, you wouldn't necessarily need something like ivermectin for certain infections. Simply injecting it perhaps twice a day for 3 days could potentially resolve the issue. Again, this is based on his experience and research.
And then there's VIP, vasoactive intestinal peptide.
Ah, VIP. This peptide is truly remarkable, potentially life-saving in certain contexts. VIP significantly enhances oxygenation to the blood supply. It acts as a potent vasodilator, meaning it widens blood vessels.
So more blood flow, more oxygen.
Exactly. It was, and apparently still is, used in critical situations, such as with elderly COVID patients who were deteriorating rapidly.
To do what?
To rapidly increase blood oxygen levels and prevent severe respiratory distress, potentially avoiding the need for mechanical ventilation or intubation.
Wow, that's incredible.
It highlights its profound, potentially life-saving potential in acute scenarios where oxygen delivery is absolutely critical.
Okay, shifting gears slightly to healing. Peptides are proving to be game changers for injury recovery and tissue repair, right?
Absolutely game changers. BPC-157, often called body protective compound, is a real standout here.
BPC-157. Heard a lot about that one. How does it help healing?
It primarily works by improving angiogenesis.
Angiogenesis.
Formation of new blood vessels. This dramatically increases red blood cell delivery and nutrient flow to injured areas, directly strengthening and rebuilding damaged tissues, whether it's tendons, ligaments, muscle, even gut lining.
So it brings the building blocks right to the injury site.
Precisely. And alongside BPC-157, there's TB-500.
TB-500. What's its role?
TB-500 acts as a massive inflammation suppressor. It helps dial down the body's inflammatory response, which, while necessary initially, can often become excessive and hinder proper long-term healing.
So BPC rebuilds, TB-500 calms the inflammation.
You got it. Together, BPC-157 and TB-500 work synergistically to promote remarkable healing. They are very frequently stacked for injury recovery because one builds and nourishes, while the other reduces the destructive inflammatory environment. Creates an optimal healing milieu.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Lastly, let's talk about hairy growth and skin health. Another area where peptides are showing incredible visible promise.
Oh, yeah. Very visible results here. GHKQ copper peptide is another one Jay refers to as a ShamWow peptide.
Another one. Okay. Why?
Because of its sheer versatility and impressive results, it is paramount for both robust hair regrowth and accelerated skin healing.
Let's start with hair. How does GHKQ help with hair loss?
It's widely considered the number one peptide for hair regrowth. A specific concentration, like a 3% grade formulation, stimulates copper antigens in the scalp.
Copper antigens?
Yeah, and it increases red blood cell formation and blood flow directly to the hair follicles. This leads to comprehensive hair regrowth if active follicles are still present. It essentially wakes up dormant follicles and strengthens existing ones by improving their environment.
So it won't grow hair on a bowling ball, but if there are follicles.
Exactly. If the follicles are still viable, just dormant or weak, it can potentially reactivate them.
And beyond hair, you said skin healing.
Dramatic skin healing. A strong GHKQ formulation can dramatically accelerate wound healing. Jay Campbell suggests a significant wound, even a deep one, could be completely sealed in 5 days with topical application.
5 days, that's fast.
Extremely fast.
All right.
In its raw material form, GHKQ is actually a crystalline purple powder. When it's mixed into a solution and applied topically, it typically appears as a royal or light blue color before it gets absorbed into the skin. It's quite striking visually.
Interesting. What's really fascinating here is the evolving understanding of hair loss causes. It's not just genetics.
Well, while androgenic alopecia, male-female pattern baldness, and genetic thinning certainly play a role, the dominant factor, according to Jay Campbell's research and perspective, is now understood to be chronic blood flow restriction to the scalp.
Blood flow restriction? How does that work?
Think about it. Certain areas, like the crown or temples, tend to thin out first. The theory is that reduced microcirculation in those specific areas slowly starves the follicles over time.
So even if you have a genetic predisposition.
Exactly. Even if you're genetically prone to thinning, actively controlling and improving blood flow restriction to the scalp, using things like peptides like GHKQ, targeted red light therapy, perhaps even the new bioregulators can significantly slow down or even prevent that hair loss.
You're counteracting the genetic tendency by optimizing the environment for hair growth.
Precisely. Fix the environment.
This brings us to a critical discussion about commonly prescribed DHT inhibitors, like finasteride or dutasteride, often the first line of defense offered for hair loss.
Right. Finasteride, Propecia proscar, dutasteride, Avodart. Their mechanism of action is to attach to scalp receptors and block the conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, DHT, or block DHT's effects, thus preventing further demineralization or hair shedding.
But Jay argues this is largely a band-aid effect.
Yes. The moment the medication is stopped, the inhibitory effect is removed, DHT levels rebound, and hair loss typically resumes, sometimes even more aggressively than before. It doesn't fix the underlying blood flow issue.
And there are bigger concerns.
Much bigger concerns. Jay Campbell argues, based on emerging research and biological age testing, that long-term use of DHT inhibitors might act as cell toxins, potentially shortening your overall lifespan by accelerating telomere shortening.
Shortening lifespan? That's serious.
It's a very serious claim, yeah.
Yeah.
And for some individuals, the side effects are not just temporary or cosmetic. They can be severe and debilitating. There's a devastating and often permanent condition called post-finasteride syndrome, or PFS.
What does that involve?
This isn't just temporary sexual dysfunction, which is commonly listed. We're talking about potentially irreversible sexual dysfunction, severe neurological issues like persistent brain fog and depression, anxiety, insomnia, and tragically, even suicide in extreme documented cases.
That's terrifying.
It's a rare but profound risk that highlights the potential dangers of aggressively blocking natural physiological pathways over the long term without fully understanding the consequences.
So what's the alternative approach then, according to this perspective?
Instead of blocking natural pathways that the body uses for various functions, DHT isn't just bad. Jay Campbell recommends using angiogenic effectors, basically. Topical solutions that improve scalp health and blood flow, like GHKQ.
Use those before stopping DHT inhibitors.
Ideally, yes. Start supporting the scalp environment before you discontinue the DHT inhibitors. This strategy provides foundational support for follicle health and might help mitigate the potential rebound hair loss and reduce the risk associated with stopping those drugs cold turkey.
This aligns perfectly with Jay Campbell's broader philosophy he mentioned. We never want to block anything that God created.
Exactly. He extends this principle to inhibiting any natural body process. He draws a direct analogy to aromatase inhibitors, or AIs, used sometimes by men on TRT to lower estrogen.
Right, blocking estrogen production.
Just as inhibiting estrogen with AIs in men can cause detrimental issues like bone mineral density loss, brain health problems, cardiovascular issues, inhibiting DHT, which has its own important roles, is also seen as potentially problematic long term.
He also mentioned that high estrogen symptoms are often misdiagnosed.
Yeah, he argues that what men sometimes perceive as high estrogen symptoms are often actually inflammatory responses related to high body fat and insulin resistance, not simply high estrogen itself needing to be chemically suppressed. It's about fixing the root cause, the inflammation and metabolic dysfunction, not just blocking a hormone.
Okay. What truly stands out to me in this entire discussion is this profound shift toward working with the body's natural processes rather than against them or trying to suppress them.
Absolutely. It fundamentally changes the paradigm of intervention, moving from brute force chemistry to intelligent biological signaling.
So what does this all mean for the future of peptides and biohacking? It genuinely feels like we're on the cusp of something massive.
A huge shift.
A complete reevaluation of how we approach health and aging.
You're absolutely right. Jay Campbell states unequivocally that the genie's out of the bottle. Peptides have irrevocably entered mainstream consciousness and usage.
They're here to stay.
They signal their permanent presence in the health and wellness landscape. There's really no turning back now.
And there are two massive, undeniable driving forces behind this explosive growth, right?
Two huge ones, yeah. Number one, the global obesity epidemic, with, as Jay states, over 70% of adults over 40 in Western countries classified as obese or overweight. There's a colossal, desperate market for effective, safe, and sustainable weight loss solutions. People are actively seeking them out.
They want solutions that work.
And the second force is a significant and widespread decline in public trust. Post-pandemic especially, trust in conventional medical institutions and pharmaceutical companies has plummeted across large swaths of the population.
Definitely felt that shift.
This has led a substantial portion of people to actively seek alternative, often more natural or root cause focused forms of healing and therapy. Peptides and bioregulators, with their inherent body-native approach, fit this demand perfectly. They resonate with people looking for something different.
So what will Big Pharma's response be to this undeniable surge? We know they're not just going to ignore it.
Predictably, they will attempt to patent as many peptides as possible, or variations thereof. We're already seeing this with the highly successful GLP-1 agonists like semaglutide,
Ozempic, Wegovy,
right, and tirzepatide,
Mounjaro, Zepbound.
Exactly. These are essentially highly optimized, patentable peptides designed for massive profit, capitalizing on the immense demand for weight loss and metabolic control.
But there are workarounds.
Oh, yeah. Comporting pharmacies have already found clever and apparently legal ways to circumvent these patents by adding minor, often beneficial but non-essential ingredients like vitamin B6 or L-carnitine to peptide formulations.
How does that help?
This effectively makes the compounded formulation chemically distinct from the patented drug, making it non-patented and allowing them to be legally produced and dispensed by the compounding pharmacy under specific regulations. It's a brilliant workaround that keeps these compounds accessible, often at a lower cost.
And the increasing availability and understanding of these compounds has enabled truly unprecedented results, apparently.
Seems so. Jay Campbell even teased his upcoming book, 30 Days to Shreds, which promises to detail protocols for achieving perhaps the most significant fat loss in human history within a short period.
That's a bold claim.
Very bold. But he attributes it to these newly accessible and optimized agents used correctly.
So ultimately, the momentum's just too big to stop.
Ultimately, yeah. The momentum of peptides is simply too great to be controlled or suppressed by traditional forces. The market has spoken, driven by public demand and, frankly, proven efficacy for many people. The focus will inevitably shift from trying to quash these compounds to figuring out how to monetize them and integrate them, perhaps more formally, into the broader medical landscape.
And the evolving role of research chemical companies is also fascinating to observe. Historically operating very much under the rug.
Very much so. Often shrouded in secrecy.
They are now moving to the forefront of innovation and accessibility. Jay shared that many progressive doctors are now even openly directing patients to reputable RCCs for specific compounds they can't get easily through prescription.
That's a huge shift. It's due to the widely recognized low harm profile, generally good tolerability, and the profound healing, fat loss, muscle building, and immunity enhancing effects that many people experience with peptides. It's truly a quiet revolution in accessibility and acceptance, happening largely outside the mainstream system.
And Jay Campbell believes the imminent rise of bioregulators, which he confidently states will dwarf peptides in their efficacy?
Yeah, dwarf and
signifies nothing less than a golden age or a new earth in healing.
Strong words. He sees it as a fundamental paradigm shift away from traditional symptom-focused medicine and towards truly regenerative root cause resolution, fixing the organs themselves.
And perhaps the most telling sign of this shift is the insane increase, as he put it, in physicians entering the peptide space.
Yeah, doctors are getting interested. They're actively seeking educational resources because traditional medical education simply doesn't cover these topics. It's a massive blind spot. So the medical community, or at least parts of it, is now playing catch up, recognizing the immense potential and, importantly, the patient demand.
Okay. Beyond physical health and longevity, there's also the incredibly compelling realm of nootropic peptides and enhanced cognition.
Right. Brain enhancement. Tesafensin, an oral small molecule classified within the broader peptide realm, is a particular standout here.
Tesafensin, what does it do?
While primarily studied and often used as a fat loss agent, tesafensine also significantly enhances brain-derived neurotrophic factors, or BDNF.
BDNF.
Brain fertilizer, basically.
That's a great way to put it, like miracle grow for your brain cells. It supports the growth and survival of neurons. This leads to heightened focus, incredible mental clarity, and helps users achieve a sustained flow state. Makes it highly appealing for cognitive enhancement and productivity.
And it helps with fat loss, too.
It has a fascinating dual action, yeah. Over time, it functions as a metabolic uncoupler.
Metabolic uncoupler. Sounds technical.
It kind of is. Okay. But basically, think of it as a compound that gently nudges your body to be slightly less efficient at making energy, causing it to burn more calories as heat instead of storing them as fat. It essentially increases your metabolic rate without needing more physical activity.
Interesting. Is dosage tricky?
Dosage sensitivity is key with tesafensine, yes. Some individuals are highly sensitive to its stimulating effects, finding that even lower doses, like maybe 25 micrograms, are more suitable for them. Start low.
And does tolerance build up? Or are there withdrawal issues?
Crucially, according to Jay, tesafensine does not cause receptor attenuation, meaning tolerance doesn't seem to build up significantly over time, and it can apparently be discontinued abruptly or cold turkeyed without any withdrawal symptoms, unlike many other cognitive enhancers or stimulants.
That's a big advantage.
A huge advantage. Jay Campbell considers tesafensine far superior to other nootropic peptides like Dihexa and C-Max, and even claims it surpasses modafinil, often considered a gold standard nootropic, in its powerful effects on well-being and sustained focus.
Okay. So with all this incredible potential, all these amazing compounds we've discussed, peptides, bioregulators, nootropics, it's vital to bring it back to a critical foundational consideration.
The foundation, yes.
Peptides are not magic bullets.
Cannot stress this enough, no.
The foundation of your health, the bedrock upon which all these advanced tools operate, is always, always lifestyle.
This is absolutely paramount. The effectiveness of peptides and bioregulators is fundamentally contingent on a dialed-in, optimized lifestyle. Without these prerequisites in place, their impact will be minimal, if not completely negligible.
They amplify good habits. They don't replace them.
Exactly. They are force multipliers, not replacements for hard work and discipline.
So what are the essential foundational elements, according to Jay Campbell?
He lists several non-negotiables. Diligent insulin control through disciplined dietary choices, that's huge. Managing your blood sugar.
Diet first.
Absolutely. Then, consistent strength training. Crucial for metabolic health, muscle maintenance, hormone balance, along with regular cardiovascular exercise, ideally a combination of both resistance and cardio.
Movement.
Yes. And, of course, adequate, deep, restorative sleep. Aiming for 6 to 8 hours nightly, ideally, indispensable for repair and regeneration.
And he's pretty blunt about this.
Jay Campbell is emphatic on this point, pulls no punches. Without these core lifestyle commitments, peptides aren't going to do jack shit for you.
Okay, then.
I mean, while healing peptides like BPC might aid recovery from an acute injury, even if your lifestyle isn't perfect, the more transformative effects the stuff related to growth hormone, longevity, significant body composition changes, those will be minimal or non-existent without this vital foundation in place.
So no shortcuts.
There are truly no shortcuts when it comes to fundamental human health. You have to do the work.
This leads to the importance of strategic stacking and prioritization. Recognizing that everyone is biochemically unique.
The N of one principle.
Yeah.
What works wonders for one person may not be optimal or even work at all for another. Your genetics, your history, your current state all matter.
So you can't just copy someone else's protocol?
Not blindly, no. It's critically important for individuals to focus on one primary objective at a time. trying to achieve too many conflicting goals simultaneously. For example, trying to maximize both ultra endurance and maximum strength.
Difficult goals to pursue together.
Very difficult. Or trying for aggressive fat loss while simultaneously trying to build significant muscle mass, it's often counterproductive. You're sending conflicting signals to your body, like trying to floor the accelerator and the brake at the same time.
Right. But some combinations are synergistic.
Oh, yes. Certain combinations make sense, like stacking a healing stack, BPCTB 500, with a muscle gain stack if you're recovering from an injury but still training, or a healing stack with a life extension stack makes sense.
But not mixing radically different goals.
Generally not. Attempting to combine radically different objectives, like trying to heal from a major injury while also pushing for aggressive fat loss, which often requires a calorie deficit and can impair healing, is generally not recommended due to competing physiological demands and the body's limited resources for adaptation and repair.
So, focus is key.
The optimal approach involves identifying your specific current priority. Is it addressing a weight problem? Is it focusing purely on anti-aging and longevity? Is it healing a persistent injury? Define the primary goal.
And then tailor the peptides to that goal.
Exactly. Tailor your peptide use, your dosage, your cycling strategy to that primary directive.
So for aging individuals, maybe the Epitalon Thymolon stack is a staple.
For aging individuals, yeah. The life extension stack of Epitalon and Thymolon is a recommended twice yearly staple for supporting long-term health span.
And for someone struggling with obesity?
For those with obesity or insulin resistance, maybe certain fat loss peptides used responsibly and alongside lifestyle changes might be a consistent longer-term component of their protocol. The key is thoughtful, prioritized, and highly personalized use, guided by your individual goals and your unique biochemical individuality.
We've truly taken a deep dive today into this revolutionary world of peptides and bioregulators.
We really covered a lot of ground.
What's become abundantly clear is that these are not just fleeting supplements. They are powerful biological tools that interact with our body's inherent wisdom, offering highly targeted healing, enhanced longevity, and optimized performance.
And it stands in such stark contrast to the often symptom management approach of traditional pharmaceuticals. It's a different philosophy.
This information truly underscores the incredible potential for you, the listener, to take personal ownership of your health and well-being in ways that were previously unimaginable.
The power is shifting, yeah. However, it equally emphasizes that these cutting-edge advancements are most effective, indeed only truly effective, when built upon the bedrock of fundamental lifestyle choices.
Your diet, your exercise, your sleep.
Exactly. They are force multipliers, not replacements for the fundamentals. You can't peptide your way out of a bad diet and no exercise.
So as we gain access to these profound tools and a deeper, more nuanced understanding of our own biology, what might true ownership of your biological health look like for you?
Mm-hmm. A personal question for everyone.
And how could these advancements redefine our collective understanding of aging, wellness, and human potential in the coming decades? Something to truly mull over.